Every wall that exists in our modern built world is an invitation. An open invitation to bring more beauty, delight, and resonance through art into our lives. Hi, I'm Morgan, and welcome to If These Walls Could Talk. Do you know of any flavorless beige walls that could use a transformation? Whether you're an artist, art advocate, building owner, or just have a big blank wall that keeps niggling at you, I hope this podcast will give you fresh ideas and information to make your next mural project a big success.
Your whole career, you've been involved with public arts, mostly a few Yes. with private galleries. Mm-hmm. Why public art?
Today, I have Elise DiMarzo back again for chapter two. Elise has been the public art program director for Palo Alto for the last 4 years, and she shares a ton of her insights around running a public arts program, what's going on in the Palo Alto community, and I think it's a lot of good information for other art commissioners, other cities, and on this episode especially, also for artists. So we're going to talk about what Elise feels is the benefits of working with local artists, the different programs Palo Alto has in place to help artists. We're going to talk about pop art versus plop art. Actually, we're just going to talk about plop art. And we're also going to discuss the fine line between accommodating the positive psychological impact art can have on a community and balancing that with works that are also challenging and thought-provoking. And lastly, we're going to talk about the benefits of temporary art and how it allows for more experimentation and spectacle. Our interview is interspersed with beautiful music spontaneously created by pianist Tatanka Bricka. Enjoy.
Because there is something different that happens when you put art out in the public space. It's completely different than a gallery or a museum where someone is walking in because they want to experience art. When you put art in someone's park or plaza that they walk through every day and suddenly there's something else there, it evokes emotion. It can evoke delight. It can evoke anger. It can, turn what was a dead space into a meeting point. And for me, the politics of the change in that space and the change in behavior was amazing. And so for me, that first happened in New York, interning with the MTA Arts for Transit. So seeing the change in behavior when artwork was incorporated into these subway systems as they were being redone, an amazing high caliber work.
Wow.
And I was hooked. And so from then on, I was all about bringing art out of the galleries and into the public space. And it's interesting. Doing public art in New York is completely different than Palo Alto in New York. We'd put something temporary out, you know, say in a plaza or a park, and people, oh, wow, okay, that's kind of interesting. But people, you know, didn't tend to get up in arms about it. And Palo Alto is a very different community. And any sort of change, you really have to be extra cautious about making sure you've done that community outreach. And, you have to be very careful. You can't just plop art. You know, that's not going to go down well.
Yeah. And at the same time, you have brought what I see a lot of just world-class art and forward-thinking art that actually fits locally, mm-hmm. but is really high caliber. So I'm curious.
Thank you.
Yeah. So impressive. I'm curious how you balance working with local artists and wanting to develop mm-hmm. a local arts community mm-hmm. with, like, do you have a certain percentage of projects that you try to bring in for local artists, or a budget, or how do you think about that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's actually something that we've been talking about. The Northern California Arts Administrators, we get together a few times a year, and we've been talking about putting together this academy to help artists who are trying to make that leap from studio work into public art and what kind of things they need to be mindful of when they're putting together an application, what to look for in contracts, what kind of things to have in their cover letter to a selection panel, what the panel's looking for, and then how to go about addressing how you translate something when you're an oil on canvas painter into architectural glass and what kind of resources are out there. So it's something that we're talking about to open more doors for artists trying to make those leaps. As of now, it tends to be more budget driven. So clearly for something that's going to have a limited budget, I advise, whether it's in private development, advising clients or for us, we're not going to hire a New York artist to fly back and forth because that's going to eat up your budget. It makes a lot more sense to have somebody who is in driving distance, who can take this on and be much closer and have the bandwidth to do that community engagement. So right now it's somewhat budget driven, but there is that larger question about how do we help artists make that leap into public art? I mean, as you know, being a studio artist and then translating that into a full-scale mural is a huge learning curve.
Yes.
And so how do we help create an academy to help artists make that leap and get their first commission?
Yeah. And so it's something we're talking about. I did go to one lecture that you put together about how to create, how to take sort of a piece of fine art and...
oh, that's right. We did that at the Art Center. Yeah.
Would take it and make it into a glass piece. Mm-hmm. That was something I hadn't really considered, and I thought it was mm-hmm. really useful. So mm-hmm. you do something, when you say academy, mm-hmm. a series, like ongoing classes to help, or mm-hmm. workshops to help artists figure out how to make their art just public art. Mm-hmm. compatible or friendly.
Well, it really starts with the whole process of how do you apply to be part of a public art pool? And if you're a studio artist, how do you put together the right letter and the right messaging so that you are under consideration and perhaps not just discarded as, well, they've never done art out, you know, on this kind of scale, so they're not appropriate.
So as a public art administrator, mm-hmm. you would take a leap to an artist that hasn't necessarily done public work before? What are you looking for in that artist? What would qualify them so that you would say, hey, we think you might be a good fit with this concept and we want to help you translate that mm-hmm. into you would, what do you look for? How would that happen?
It's project to project. So, you know, it really depends on if we feel like that artist is really a good fit. And they've done some large scale projects before. You can't take somebody who really doesn't have much of a resume and suddenly give them a, you know, $500,000 budget. But someone who just hasn't quite made that leap yet to those materials, it can be doable. So that's where we sort of can facilitate. Here are some local fabricators we can talk to. This is what the process would look like. You know, and find out what is their ability to take that journey, because mm-hmm. it is a challenge. And there, when you're changing materials, there can be some unexpected shifts that some artists are going to be more comfortable with and some may not. So it, like I said, every public artwork is its own journey.
Challenged by the high price of housing. So you
I think it's Bay Area wide. It's not just Palo Alto.
Yeah.
I mean, the artists are all being priced out.
Yes. So how do you help develop or support young emerging artists who, as we know, it takes years to really develop a voice and mm-hmm. get good and get the skill. You need mm-hmm. 10 or 15 years of being able to slog. And if you have a huge rent or mortgage,
yeah.
you really can't experiment as much. So how is that going to impact the arts and the art community in Palo Alto? And how do you still try to foster an artistic community? Or does it just change and become, well, we're a techie art, we're kind of a STEAM sort of arts community here. And we think it should all be couched in technology because that's what our strength is. I mean, where do you just embrace what you are?
Yeah, I would hate to have it all just couched in technology because it surrounds us every day. And for me, there's something very refreshing about the smell of oil paint or, you know, seeing somebody's hands get dirty in clay. So so I don't really see it going just one way or another. But one of the things we do in Palo Alto is that we offer the Cubberly Artist Studio Program. And so it's city-subsidized rent for these artist studios. And it's an amazing thing that Palo Alto is able to do that. And Palo Alto has this great history of supporting the arts. I mean, look at the Children's Theater, the Palo Alto Arts Center, the Public Art Program. We have the Community Theater at Cubberly. We're really fortunate to be in a community that has a history of embracing the arts. So that's one small way we're able to support 22 artists right in there now.
Great.
Wow. But Bay Area wide, yes, I'm seeing artists being pushed out further and further. I hear from artists all the time who work a day jobby job and they're doing their art at night. There are plenty of artists who, once you become parents, their art becomes sort of marginalized or shelved for a number of years before they can come back to it. So I think if it's something that's truly part of you, it'll remain part of you, even if it's sometimes muted at times. But I'm still seeing just a broad diversity. So we do have lots of the techie artists. And I think that's interesting. And I like all of the new media stuff. I feel like there's so much of it right now. It feels a little oversaturated. And I think people are in love with the technology and trying to figure out, now, how do I take that technology and adapt it for a creative use that's really meaningful.
That touches.
Yeah. I feel like what I'm seeing is a lot of experimentation. It's a lot of sort of glimmers of what could be. And it's really hard to get to that next level of really doing something that touches your soul with it.
Neutral about public art.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that politically correct to say, you know, I don't like that, I don't like that. But to me, the public space is an opportunity to offer something that touches us, that mm-hmm. adds to our life.
Mm-hmm.
And that humans naturally, it's helpful for us to have sort of inviting, uplifting narratives around us.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, if there's eyes on the wall watching us that have a mean look, it sort of, we feel that and mm-hmm. it impacts how we feel. So I actually think I have a little bit of an agenda around public art. I think neutral, beige, flavorless, sterile, lacking humanity is not the ideal. I think offering something. But what do you think? Do you have an agenda that you, you're not allowed to, I guess, is about like, but truly, I mean, do you think, oh, we shouldn't consider everything. This is an intellectual piece. There's merit mm-hmm. because it's scaring everybody, but it's starting conversation. Or mm-hmm. where do you fall on that spectrum?
When we're commissioning art, right, it depends on what you want for the space. So if you're in a space where you want to surprise and delight with something whimsical, I think that's very different than if you're creating artwork that is leading into, you know, what may be the, you know, a witness holding area of the police department where you need something calming. And so when we're commissioning art, it really is site by site about what may be appropriate for that space. In looking back at the existing collection and some of the pieces that that have been more controversial, because we do have, you know, some people who are very vocal who will say, oh, I can't stand that piece, I don't like it. I found in the example of one of them that we recently removed, not because people didn't like it, but because it was structurally unsound, I want to say, that there, it was about half and half as people came up and said, oh, thank goodness you're getting rid of that piece. And other people who said, you know what? I really loved that piece because it made people talk about the public art and it stirred something. And, you know, I think I came more out of that camp, whether you love it as an artistic piece or not, it became a node for conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think there is some validity to that. Mm-hmm. I just love the way public art can change a space and make you feel something. Mm-hmm.
You know, one piece of art that has grown on me, I don't know if this is the one that's going to be removed, on California Avenue, there's the doll with the face on her stomach. Mm-hmm. And it's slightly disconcerting, right? Because she, I'm remembering, mm-hmm. she doesn't have a face or she doesn't have a mm-hmm. head. So you're trying to always sort through. It's not a positive message. It's kind of weird. Why is, you know, it should be so innocent, but there's this head that looks kind of, like sort of surprised, or you can't quite figure out this face on. But it has grown on me, and it's, I like it. And one of the reasons I like it is I'm doing this meditation class, and sometimes we practice just taking our head off of our shoulders and just holding it in our laps.
And you're imagining the sculpture.
And I'm imagining the sculpture. And it helps me because I have a visual of that. Mm-hmm. And actually, when I see it, I think, oh, she's not trying to analyze everything, actually. She's more integrated with mm-hmm. her heart and her stomach and her body. And so I'm like, that's how I see it now. And it's positive to mm-hmm. me. So that's interesting because that's morphed. I mean, that's been there a long time.
It has been.
It's an interesting piece.
That one was removed.
I wondered.
It was structurally unsound. Not because there were people who disliked it, because we don't deaccession anything just because people come out and say they don't like it.
Yeah.
Because tastes in public art change over time.
In individuals. I was on the fence on
sure.
that. If you asked me, I would have been half yes and half no.
Right.
I
And it depends on the day. But but yeah, that was an interesting piece. And unfortunately, we had to return it to the artist. Mm. But yeah, we'll see what's next for Cal Ave. We've got a couple of big projects going in there. And so that'll be exciting. You know, the Avenue of the Arts is getting some more art with the new public safety building and the parking structure that are going in.
Mm, wow.
Yeah.
And so in that process, you start 2 years in advance.
With easily,
call
yeah.
for artists mm-hmm. and sort of identifying the site, or identifying whether you want sculpture or something more organic.
So generally what happens is when the building is still early in design development, we go ahead and we, you know, put out a call to artists and maybe have identified a few potential sites, knowing that those sites may change. And then bring the artist on board. So they really become part of the design team and may say, like, I love this approach view. Can we pull back some of those walls? And this is where I want to integrate, or I want to do something on the ground plane leading up to it because I want to be out in this plaza space. So, by bringing them in early, you avoid, you know, bringing in a potentially fabulous artist, but saying, this is the rectangle we've picked out for you. And that's it. And you know, the ship has already sailed on the building design to be able to do something larger.
Nice.
So we like to be able to bring them in early enough. So if they want to go big, we can allow for that. So,
yeah. And also integrating the artwork into the space and the architecture. So it's site specific.
Yeah. And it all has to be integrated into the design. So it's more efficient for your construction team, your architect, and your artist to have all of that happen at the same time.
Awesome. How do you stay up to date on what's trending, what to do next? I mean, where do you get inspiration for what kind of program you want to have? And
it's hard because we have so many projects right now, and I feel like I'm just constantly running. But my refresh is always, you know, my colleagues and I are always passing articles back and forth. There's a great national network of public art administrators, and we, you know, post things, you know, really topical things that are really helpful. And sometimes, you know, put out calls for help. You know, there's this crazy discussion that started in my community. Have any of you all dealt with this before? And so there's a great camaraderie of public art administrators, because what we do is so in the public eye and in the public space. And it is kind of an unusual field. And so we really have to help each other out.
Tell me about a work of art that had an impact on you and why.
So I will have to say the work of public art that had the biggest impact on me was the gates in Central Park. So at the time that I worked for the city of New York, that proposal had been around for a long time. I was one of a long line of people who was trying to find a way to bring that project to fruition. It was not going to happen under that administration. And so I left that position to go work for a private gallery for some time. And when it finally happened, and this was the park, my office used to be in Central Park. I walked through that park to go home every day. Central Park was my home. And to see all of those beautiful gates go up and how it changed my experience of a park that I had walked thousands of times, it was just, it was beautiful. And it brought so many people out. And it forever changed Central Park in a way in my mind, even though it totally disappeared. So I love the way temporary public art, especially on that kind of scale, can completely change your experience of a very familiar, beloved space, and then it goes back to that familiar space. But you always carry that memory of that experience. So for me, that's the public artwork that really touched me very deeply.
Mm. I'm reminded of, I read the book Da Vinci this year, that biography, and he talks about how a big part of Da Vinci, but I've also heard this for Michelangelo, was to create like spectacles and like galas. Like they essentially designed, they were essentially party planners as their day jobs for wealthy people.
Yeah.
That's what they did besides fine arts. Then they'd also were responsible for putting on these big, I don't know, like theater events. Mm-hmm. And I mean, what a great way to test out ideas and to just shake things up. You can go bigger. You can go a little further, knowing that it's going to be taken down in just a little bit.
But that's the beauty of temporary public art, isn't it? You can go big. You can go spectacle. And then it goes away. Mm-hmm. Right? But it has a capacity to surprise, to delight, to engage people. And then you can change it. And it's a great way to get people comfortable with that change. As you were talking about earlier, like, I don't want anything new. I don't want any change. Temporary, pilot, those are your best friends. Like, okay, we're going to test this out. We're going to gather the feedback and then see what happens. And more often than not, the feedback is really positive. It's a way to ease people in and get them comfortable with that change.
Well, thank you so much.
This was fun. Thank you.
You have so much to share. I hope that you'll come back and talk to us again, because, you know, I feel like for both artists and other small communities that you would be able to offer a really unique perspective just because you have such a well-run program and such an interesting time and place to be curating a public art program. It's really interesting.
It's great. We're just lucky, you know, Palo Alto has such support for the arts and, you know, so we're able to do public art in our municipal projects and also requiring these big private developers to either commission art on site or pay in lieu so that we can use them for more public art in the community. And so we're just very fortunate. Knock on, there's got to be wood around here somewhere. But
I have Elise trapped in my van right now. It's my new portable mobile
recording studio.
Now, what would be really fun is if we had a driver and we were driving around looking at public art as we do this, we could totally take this show on the road.
That is why you are the public art program director at City of Palo Alto.
That's it.
Thank you, Elise, for joining me today.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure. I really had a blast.